Sports Radio 610 presents Seth Payne and Sean Pendergast.
We coming to H-Time. Let's get to work in, man. Let's go.
Great day. Great day. Oh, give me some juice, baby.
Oh, yeah.
59-yard attempt for the win. Weeks with the snap. Tommy Townsend with the hold. And Kaimi Fairbairn with a chance to give the Texans the victory. Here's the snap by Weeks. The spot. Here's the kick by Fairbairn. Has the distance. And it's good! Fairbairn wins it at the buzzer! The Texans beat the Bills! 59 yards for the dub on H-Town Day. 23-20.
Mark Vandermeer on a fantastic call there for a fantastic ending of a really intense football game yesterday over at NRG Stadium as we welcome you in on a victorious Reaction Monday here on Sports Radio 610. 23-20, the final score. The Texans beat the Bills yesterday in yet another one of those Texan games that felt like early on it could have been the Texans putting the foot on the throat. The Bills are a very good football team. They are a very good football team that the Texans, especially defensively, forced into looking very, very bad at times yesterday. And this, Seth Payne, the biggest, certainly the biggest regular season win of the D'Amico Ryans era for me yesterday.
Yeah.
I know the Colts win got them into the postseason last year. I think with the way, I thought Clint Sterner made a great case for it yesterday on the postgame show. With the way that expectations are for this year as opposed to last year.
Yeah.
And the fact that the Bills, regardless of how they looked yesterday, and Josh Allen, regardless of how they looked yesterday, the Texans had a lot to do with it. That is an MVP candidate on what's been one of the best teams in the AFC over the last 5 years. That is a huge win, and to me, the signature regular season win for the Texans.
I disagree with you guys on the significance or the bigness of the win, but I don't want to debate all that. I mean, like that. Remember, the Browns were one of the best defenses, the Browns, they were horrible in the regular season, but the Colts game was just so big for so many reasons. Yeah. As far as yesterday. At the end of the day, you go through these games and these Texans games, it always feels like sometimes it feels really good at the beginning and then it feels like misery for about two or three quarters. And then it feels good at the end when they win, or at least you feel relief. Yesterday it felt awful right at the very beginning because offensively they did all those things that you didn't want to see. We're going to go short and we're going to run and we're going to get snuffed out. And then all of a sudden it all took off. The difference about yesterday, I think partly is just that it's the Bills that you expect it to be close. A lot of people, before the Ravens game, a lot of people thought there was no chance in hell the Texans were going to beat the Bills. But they made them look every bit like the worst version of Josh Allen that there is. It looked like Trevor Lawrence out there. Mm-hmm. And Josh Allen doesn't have chemistry with those receivers. He didn't have Khalil Shakir. And yet there are lots of quarterbacks out there who don't have Khalil Shakir chemistry with their receivers, who throw more for more than 130 yards. That was really, really nice by the defense. And then offensively, I think CJ, I was glad to see him have a game where he almost single-handedly took them out of the game at the end and then brought them back. Because all very, very good quarterbacks in the NFL have those moments.
Yeah. Yeah, that would have been really interesting. If they had gone on to lose that game, I mean, that would be the first time that I would be coming in here if they had gone on to lose that game saying that C.J. Stroud was a primary reason that they lost the game.
Well, the other time...
He's always been... When they lose, he's always been a contributor because everybody contributes to a loss or a win. But that was jarring to see, and I don't expect it to be a trend. One thing I'll tell you what I'm not going to do today is come in and say, am I worried? Are you worried about C.J. Stroud?
Right.
I think it's a back quarter for a good player, but interception, fumble, intentional grounding in three straight possessions at the end of the game.
The one thing that I thought of was last year when he threw the interception versus the Bengals, and then they came back and they had some help from the Bengals with that, but on the drop touchdown that would have put it out of the way.
Tyler Boyd, yeah.
Yeah, but CJ came back and they won the game even after he'd thrown that interception. It was very similar to last year's Bengals game where a lot of people were wondering last year, why were you throwing in that situation? Yeah. Yesterday, especially when he got that intentional grounding, I don't know why you're throwing there. Not with Kaimi Fairbairn as your kicker,
you don't need to get much closer.
No, I mean, I guess if you really want to put it away and be aggressive there, And then CJ thought he was making the right decision, didn't think it was going to be as close a call as it was. But it was, I didn't have a problem with the call. But then he comes back and he rectifies it.
Well, he rectified, and the big thing was he got an opportunity to rectify it. And that was because of Sean McDermott, the head coach of the Bills. Like the Texans, I don't want to minimize the role of special teams in this. People are going to remember the Kaimi Fairbairn field goal to win the game, as they should. 59 yards out. We had Kaimi on the postgame show. He was excellent. We'll have some of that for you as we roll on with the show. What I really like, D'Amico loves to talk about complimentary football. All coaches do. And I thought the fact that CJ had such a rough fourth quarter that Tommy Townsend, with under a minute to go, punts the ball back after the intentional grounding, punts the ball back to the Bills, puts it down on the three, which was big because now the Bills, they were going to be aggressive and try to go for the win and go get a field goal. It's really hard to operate that far back. And you could tell from Josh Allen, it was really hard to operate. So Tommy Townsend pins them back there. For whatever reason, the Bills decided to throw the ball three times, so the Texans didn't have to empty any of their timeouts. They walked off the field still with two timeouts left in that game. They had all three timeouts left when they got the ball back. Robert Woods' punt return was huge. That was 13 yards you picked up, and he did it like a vet, man. Got it, and immediately went north-south. No jimmy-jacking around there, no running, trying to get to the corner. Straight up field, gets it to the 46-yard line of the Buffalo Bills. CJ and Daria Gumbawale connect on a perfect little 5 yard, just little flick play. Yeah. They burn their time out, and then Kaimi kicks a field goal. I thought the complimentary nature of special teams in that last minute with Townsend with the punt, Woods with the return, Fairbairn with the field goal was really, really cool to see.
And they also
the ultimate Frank Ross sequence.
Defensively on that final three and out by the Bills, they had great rush off the edge.
Yes.
And that was one thing yesterday. Where I was conflicted about, and at the end of the day, they put a lot of pressure on Josh Allen. He completed one pass on third down when he was under pressure. It was like 16 times he was under pressure in general.
He was 1 for 14 for 24 yards when pressured.
When pressured, that's what it was, and not just on third down, but on. So that's a combination of coverage and getting a rush. And a lot of the good rushes, Josh Allen was getting outside the pocket. That's one thing I keep thinking of D'Amico Autry when he comes back. Sometimes when the ends flush the quarterback and the defensive tackles are supposed to come around and contain on the fly, you got to improv it. D'Amico Autry's just got a different level of athleticism as those guys. So some of that might get cleaned up. Part of it is just Josh Allen being Josh Allen.
Yeah. Did you realize Josh Allen was having as bad a day statistically as he was while we were watching the game?
I did. 9 for 30. Yeah, at one point he was 1 for 9 and CJ was 9 for 9, I think.
I remember that. Yeah. I remember that. But then I'm like, okay, well, he's not going to be 1 for 9 the whole. Like, he's going to have some stretches here. I just didn't realize it was that bad.
I knew it was. It was still in the second quarter, I think, wasn't it, when he tried to throw back across his body? And
it was at the end of the second quarter.
He had a wide right open Cooks there, and it just fell, or Collins,
Hollins. He hit Al Shire right in the hands on the one I'm thinking of.
Okay, no, I was thinking of a different one, but the one that just wasn't incomplete. Yeah. So, but
He was throwing. He was running to his left, and he tried to Mahomes it.
But then, and then Al Shire having two straight interceptions dropped.
That's the one I was thinking
of. Al Shire, I was nervous as hell with Al Shire right from the get-go because he missed that tackle bad early
in the game,
and he didn't quite look right, and we knew he had an illness, and
it turns out.
Yeah, and he ended up, was that true? Okay.
I saw it reported.
Oh, you saw it reported?
It was on the internet.
People were telling me online, and I was like, can you send me the link? And they're like, I don't know, man. I saw it on Instagram. So I didn't know for sure.
Yeah, I think Aaron Wilson had it.
So he ended up getting it going, and he was sideline to sideline, as he always is. So there's a couple things about the defense right now that still very much concern me. They're just so tiny and light. They're out there in nickel all the time because Christian Harris is in the Kyle Tucker zone. They get hit with 150 yards rushing, but they come up with these big plays in any given series where they're drive killers. You get a tackle for a loss. I mean, Fatakasi got that tackle for a loss that was as good as a sack.
That was huge.
6 yard tackle for a loss on a screen.
That was huge. The Bills were starting to get a little something going at that point, too.
Right. So, and then there's times where guys are wide open over the middle, and yet. You look up, and Josh Allen's got 130 yards passing on the day.
Yeah.
They're D'Amico's able to do a lot more things defensively this year because he's got guys who can play man, but it's it was really impressive.
They are now 11-3 in one-score games under D'Amico Ryans. They're 4-0 this season in one-score games under D'Amico Ryans. They have not lost a one-score game since the Jacksonville Matt Amendola boink off the crossbar game in week 12 of last year. So I know there's one school of thought like, these games don't have to be this close, and they don't. And people are right if they say that. I think the Texans feel that way, that these games don't have to be as close as they are. We make some self-inflicted mistakes, and we keep teams in the game. I'll go glass half full here. There is something to this team in these close games at the end of games, and there is a belief in one another that they have. It's nothing you can really measure with statistics or anything like that. All I know is I watch the way this team operates and the way this team kind of loves each other on the sidelines and everything else. And I watch other NFL games and highlights and press conferences and things like that. And there is something to this team, man. There is some sort of magic in the last couple minutes to this team.
One of the things that helps the magic, as opposed to like you just found an old spell book in the attic and you're trying incantations and stuff. The little fairy that comes in and makes it all actually work is Kyme Fairbairn. He floats in. Like Peter Pan.
Wings.
And then he comes in and just, and then boop, there you go.
Yeah.
And then he flies back off to heaven.
That helps.
He's so clutch. Who was doing the play-by-play on TV?
Iron Eagle.
It was Iron Eagle. Yeah. Iron Eagle invoked Clutch City.
I heard that. I loved it. I got chills.
It was. Yeah. I don't know. I was like, hey, hold off there, buddy. Don't go start invoking the Rockets championships until this team really, really has a signature win. But still. Okay, I like the nod, Iron Eagle. I like the nod.
No, I was cool with it.
Jamie's like, he's just like in a movie about a burglary or something, where he's kind of like the one, he's the one in the group of criminals. He's like the safe cracker or something.
Yeah.
Who's just almost
ice in his veins.
Super smart, calm, cool, and collected to the point where like, why is this guy a criminal? Kyme goes out and then he steals people's souls.
He was really he was interesting. We had him on the post game show and he was talking about how much studying he does of other sports criminals, you know, like Tom Brady and Tiger Woods and Kobe Bryant and guys
that,
criminals that steal other people's souls, not that are actual criminals. It was really interesting just to hear him talk about his process.
I look forward to hearing that because I wasn't able to listen to it.
He was good. He was very good. We'll have a little of that a little later on in the show. So the Texans win yesterday, 23-20, huge win. 4-1 on the season, and if the Saints do everybody a little solid tonight and upset the Chiefs, you'll wake up on Tuesday with the Texans as the number one seed in the AFC, people. But as of right now, 2 seed in the AFC, 4-1 record, hard to complain about that. And we will not today complain about that one tiny bit. So good job, Texans, yesterday. It wasn't all good. The Texans are now dealing with an injury. Sounds like it's going to be all okay here in the near term, but the second half sure looked a lot different than the first half yesterday, and this was a big reason why. We will talk about that coming up next.
It's a Shoppers John Deere Reaction Monday on Sports Radio 610. Here's Payne and Pendergast.
First down Texans to begin this possession at the Houston 33. Stroud fakes the toss. He has time in the pocket. He's going to gun it long. And Nico Collins is there at the 15-10-5. Rock and roll! Touchdown, H-Town! A bomb from Stroud to Collins.
Okay, that was fun. Harkening back to that Colts game of 18, 2023, and first play. That was the first play of the game. This was same thing, not first play of the game, but a one play drive. They come out on 1st and 10, play action. Nico's open by about 6 steps, and he waltzes into the end zone.
I was angry about the time of possession at that point. Come on, that's not how you win the box.
You gotta possess the ball. You gotta keep Josh Allen off the field. It was a great play. It put the Texans up 14-3. At that point in the game, I was thinking, okay, maybe this is the game where they put it all together. No penalties in the first half. That was good to see. But on that Nico Collins play, I didn't notice him kind of pulling up while he was scoring a touchdown, and afterwards he's dapping up all his teammates. Yeah. So the last thing I thought was Nico Collins is going to come over to the sideline and go into the blue tent. But he did. He was in there for a long time. Like an inordinately long time compared to usual. So long the teammates started to go in. I don't know if you noticed this. Teammates started to go in and check on him.
No, I didn't notice that.
CJ went in and checked on him. Tank Dell, Stephon Diggs, they all went in and checked on him. I'm like, man, this is...
like they were visiting an Arab dignitary or something in a tent in the desert.
Yeah, or a sick friend or whatever. It was... So that was a little unnerving. Nico eventually comes out of the tent. He goes to the locker room. He's in street clothes for the second half of this game. And he's got a hamstring injury. Here was CJ Stroud after the game. Because it got, I don't think it's a coincidence, their offense was very gummed up after Nico was out of that game.
I noticed a difference, Sean.
I did too.
I noticed like everything fell apart.
You know what I
penalties
noticed?
In the third quarter.
You know what I noticed? They didn't score any touchdowns after Nico was out of the
game.
Seems
like, you know one thing I've noticed too? Ever since Joe Mixon left, they don't seem to be running the ball as
now
well either.
Now that you mention it, yeah, you're right about that.
Although, somebody pointed out yesterday, and I'm glad they did, because they hadn't been, when Joe Mixon was in and before he got hurt in week two, they weren't running the ball all that well.
No,
so. Nico obviously a big difference.
Here
still ends up being the second leading receiver on the team yesterday with one or two receptions.
67-yard catch will help you with that. Here's CJ Stroud. What do you lose when Nico goes out of the game?
Man, I think he's the best receiver in football. You know, so you know when he gets out the game, it definitely is tough on us, and a lot of things are, you know, predicated towards him and playing for him. And you know, I definitely do think, like, we still have a lot of other guys to step up, too. So, I thought they did a good job doing that. I thought Hutch played solid, you know. And really, I mean, you got to just find a way to win. We did that today. So, definitely hope Nico's okay. And just we can get him back as soon as possible. But I definitely know that we have a lot of depth in that room.
Okay, so just to get the report on Nico out of the way, and then we'll kind of break down what this all means. The reports I saw was Nico didn't talk to the media because when you're injured, you normally don't. He was in good spirits. I saw that. Aaron Wilson reports this 14 hours ago. Optimism with the Texans that wide receiver Nico Collins and offensive tackle Titus Howard's hamstring injuries are short-term and could be back as soon as next week against the Patriots, per league sources.
Oh, okay. Good. Well, he had this a couple weeks ago where it popped up on the injury report. Yeah. And I hope this isn't a touch-and-go thing all year long, but it seems to have a little bit of a... You know what? This would be a nice... year where if the bye week wasn't so late. Yeah, it would be nice to have a bye week midway through.
That's the exact thing I thought of when he went out with the injury. I'm like, man, this week 14 bye is gonna come back to haunt.
Dude, this is where I show up as not planning for the future. Because you asked me in the beginning of the season, what do you think about the late bye? And I'm like, balderdash, I say. Everybody, you should just want to play. You should hate the bye week because I'm tough.
I want it this week. I know.
That was the great thing about that play was, look, teams are going to play conservatively, try to take the top off the defense, offense, et cetera, et cetera. But every now and then they're going to screw up. And they had Cole Bishop in there in relief of Taylor Rapp, safety. And that safety got mesmerized with the crossing route underneath. You could see the cornerback turn into yell at the safety after Nico had gotten past the safety. When the opportunity is there, you take it. And credit the offensive line on that play, too. That particular play, I remember noticing that Blake Fisher had a really nice pass protection rep.
Snap,
like, he didn't. I haven't watched all of his plays yet, but I would say on the sum total of it, it looked a lot more promising than last week. So you might have something there with Blake Fisher.
So this Nico thing.
Yeah.
What's your concern level?
Seven?
The Nico thing. Yeah.
Seven. And I'm not looking past the... There's no chance in hell I'm looking past the Patriots going up to New England. Ever since Jacoby Brissett back in, what was it, 2014?
2016. 2016. It was the Brock Osweiler year.
2016.
Week three.
When, like, oh, no, Jacoby
Thursday
Brissett.
Night football.
Don't worry about him. And don't listen to anybody that says they can run, that he can run. They're just making assumptions, and then he ran all over
the
Texans.
He was a young man back then, though.
Yeah.
He's an old man now. Where you were going with that, I felt, was, if Nico, I don't want to minimize the Patriots, but if Nico needs, you know, another week to let that hamstring heal.
Well, it's what I was worried about last week. Even though I don't think D'Amico and Casario operate this way, when Joe Mixon practiced on Friday and then didn't play, there was part of me that thought, like, I hope they're not thinking like, we can beat the Jaguars with or without him. So I think they were just being cautious. Likewise with Nico, I think they'll. I think it'll be purely a medical decision based on. All right, no, he feels
can
fine.
He go?
On,
yeah,
but with a hamstring, once you have recurring stuff, that's where I start to feel like, all right, man, I want him to feel good for a whole week before he goes back out and does it again. But I don't know. We'll see.
I'm fine with them being cautious with Nico Collins, given the opponent coming up. Am I minimizing the Patriots? Perhaps.
Maybe. I actually hope he's sick. Like, I hope that he was dehydrated. Like, he had whatever that Alshire had and was dehydrated, and it was more cramp than it was a strained hammy or something like that. That's my hope.
That's
my hope for Nico, because I love him, is that he was deathly ill for a couple of
days. And the hamstring was the side effect.
We have no evidence of that, but that's my hope for him. If we can only be so lucky that he was really, really sick.
Yeah. A lot of people concerned about it, man. A few texts on here. What's the status on Nico? That's the status on
Nico.
That's what we know. He's day to day. He's day to day. I wonder if the Texans, I thought about this. I was reading Adam Schefter's article yesterday about the Devontae Adams trade talks are expected to heat up this week once he gets over his hamstring injury that he has right now. I'm going to put air quotes around it. Yeah,
this is one of those ones that mysteriously clears up when he gets traded. Yeah,
could be a hamstring hold in.
That's what it feels like.
Yeah. But could the Texans yesterday have amped up the urgency for the Buffalo Bills to get in on the Devontae Adams trade talks?
I think so. Khalil Shakir not being out there was a big deal, and it's not like Khalil Shakir is an awesome receiver. He's a nice receiver.
Think about what you just said. If Khalil Shakir not being on the field is a big deal for you, you might need Devontae Adams.
Yeah, exactly, exactly. Yeah. That's where it just and yet at the same time, I think with the Bills right now, I was curious about this. I didn't want to lean into this too much before the Texans played them, but when a team starts out early in the season and they're playing kind of a different mode of football and the quarterback's spreading it around to a lot of nondescript guys, usually in the National Football League, usually that catches up to them and teams start to figure it out. And credit to D'Amico Ryans and the Texans defense in coverage, especially for understanding, hey, you can blanket these guys. You're going to give up a few things against the run yesterday, but I thought they were appropriately aggressive in coverage. And Allen was really out of a lot of options. And he also just wasn't, because he was on the run or because of whatever else. I mean, he had some opportunities. We're spoiled, I guess, with CJ. Some of the sideline toe tapper type stuff. Like, why are you throwing it away from where his hands are? Why are you not? Why is that not automatic? This feels like usually
we are spoiled.
If CJ misses a couple of those, and I think yesterday I felt like he was a little off at times compared to his usual standards. It's a shock.
He was 28 of 38.
Right. That's exactly what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
Hey, like, there were times where, like, oh gosh, usually that's like kind of a, usually that's one of those throws that doesn't look humanly possible, and yet we don't bat an eyelash at
it. Yeah.
So to see Josh kind of flailing around like a big Wyoming hick out there, heaving the ball like it's a shot put or something, it was kind of a letdown.
I was happy for Stephon Diggs in that he had a good game, 6 catches, 82 yards, some big chain movers during the game. So it's a good game. It wasn't a middle finger game at the Bills, but Stephon Diggs was the leading receiver for the Houston Texans yesterday. Good enough. And they win the game, most importantly. I was happy for Stephon Diggs that he had a good game against the Bills, and the Bills had a game where the lack of a go-to wide receiver was so glaring.
Yeah.
It was so glaring. Guys that couldn't get open. Keon Coleman's getting hit in the back of the helmet with a pass where he looks like he's in block mode, and Josh Allen's throwing a slant route to him. That part for me, if I were Diggs, if I were super petty and I were Stephon Diggs, I don't know that I'd say it into a microphone, but as I'm driving home in my Cybertruck later on that night,
because
I think he has a Cybertruck, I would be saying, they needed me today.
Yeah, this is
the Bills needed me
today.
You know
my favorite thing about Stephon Diggs? And this isn't, he does do this. He's very conscious of ball security when he's in traffic. He almost looks like
that.
You know, tight ends flat out say, look, I know I'm not that athletic compared to these other guys, there's no way in hell I'm fumbling this. So they usually just cross their arms around their chest, like, for extreme ball security.
Yeah.
Stephon Diggs looked very much yesterday like there was no way in hell he was going to fumble the ball against the Bills.
I noticed
and
that.
Have that be the thing. Because he was covered up like he was going in over the goal line every time he had the ball.
Yep.
I thought that was really nice. I mean, Stephon Diggs yesterday averaged about 12 plus yards per reception.
It was 82 yards on 6 catches.
It was a little bit more. It was a little bit more explosive than what he's been. He's been below 10 yards per reception so far this season, and it's a lot of possession type stuff. in terms of people expecting there to be drama or something. You know what it felt like? Because they had they sent the Bills reporter here for the entire week, basically, to ask anybody, like, hey, is Stefon Diggs causing problems around
really?
Here? He felt like a special investigator, where you're like, all right, they're going to find something if you keep digging long enough.
Right.
You're going to find something. This is, I feel like, now I'm a politician myself. and for the most part, nobody really, I don't think either fan base was really eager for it. Josh Allen and Stefon Diggs have said all the right things. He's on a one-year deal. It's a non-factor and a non-issue, I think. And part of it is that Stefon Diggs, he's in a different situation than he was in Buffalo. He can look across the field at Buffalo and say, oh, yeah, I'm like their only, especially with Khalil Shakir, I'm like the only guy that could do anything out there and create on his own. So, of course, my role is going to be different than what it was when I was younger in my career here in Houston, but it makes sense.
Yeah.
It makes sense. As opposed to last year where he's being relegated for, honestly, a bunch of slappies.
These guys.
Yeah, like those guys out there.
Those guys.
130 yards of receiving.
Minus Keon Coleman, those guys.
Mm.
Boy, I'm watching the screen up in our, they're going through all the NFL games, and they just showed the last minute of the Texans game. That decision by Sean McDermott to let Josh Allen throw the ball three times,
yeah,
all incomplete. By the way, Josh Allen, after he got his head bounced off the turf,
oh, yeah,
0-for-5.
Yeah.
0-for-5. Now, granted, on the other 25 attempts he had during the day, he was 9-for-25.
Right, yeah. I don't think – I was wondering about that when people looked at it, and I know some people are trying to make a controversy about him going back in. It's not like they bypassed the process or anything like that. I was curious. I thought maybe people watching would think like, oh, he was concussed and not realize it. No. He was just as bad before he was concussed. And on that last series, there was pressure. I mean, they were humming there. And it was deep in their own. He was standing there in the end zone. I mean, it would have been a safety.
You
to
have
end
to
the
get
game.
Rid of it. Yeah. Like a safety wins the game there.
Yeah.
So you got to get it out. And I watched McDermott's press conference last night, Seth, when I got home.
Yeah.
He came into the press conference, and before he could even entertain questions, immediately apologized for the clock management
really?
At the end of the game.
Oh, wow.
He knew they messed
the
up.
The Texans have three timeouts in that moment, and obviously plenty of time with which to work it. And to not run at all on any of those three downs when the score is tied, yeah, that was an odd. I mean, that was
at least run it on first down and see if you pop
right, right,
something.
Right. No, and see what the Texans at that point too. You know, you can almost make the decision whether to just let the clock run out. Yeah. You're in a bad spot, and you're playing a team that has Kyahmi Fairbairn as their kicker.
Yep.
That kick would have been good from like 65 yards yesterday. It was scary as hell. It might have curved in and out of the actual actual
it
zone.
It knuckled.
Yeah,
he talked about that. He's like, no, it had some tail on it. In the post game show, he talked about that. It had some maneuvering on that football. But all's well that ends well. Goes through the uprights, and the Texans are victorious, 23-20 over the Buffalo Bills yesterday. It is a victorious reaction Monday. Let's get into headlines.
Oh yeah,
we will relive the magic of Kyahmi Fairbairn and his right foot in headlines. We'll get into some of the headlines in the NFL. I now have a team that I'm rooting for in the Major League Baseball playoffs as well, based on something that happened yesterday. So we'll get to that and a whole lot more. It's a reaction Monday here on Sports Radio 610.
Payne and Pendergast with today's headlines.
59-yard attempt for the win. Weeks with the snap, Tommy Townsend with the hold, and Kyahmi Fairbairn with a chance to give the Texans the victory. Here's the snap by Weeks, the spot, here's the kick by Fairbairn, has the distance, and it's good! Fairbairn wins it at the buzzer! The Texans beat the Bills! 59 yards for the dub on H-Town Day, 23-20.
Mark Vandermeer on the call. We will, at the top of the hour, go back through some of the twists and turns in this game through the voice of Mark Vandermeer. We've got some of the highlights, so we'll do that at the top of the hour. But here's what you need to know today. The Texans win 23-20 on a last-second field goal by Kyahmi Fairbairn, who became the all-time leading scorer in Texans history yesterday with his second field goal of the game, the field goal that made it 20-3 at the beginning of the second half. The Texans allow the Bills back in this game. Ultimately, it's tied 20-20. And in a way similar to last week's game against the Jags, the defense really, really helped out the offense. The defense gave the offense opportunities. Eventually, they cashed in on the one that they needed to at the very end of the game and overcame what was, I mean, I don't think it's a reach to say, the worst quarter of C.J. Stroud's Texans career so far in the fourth quarter.
Two
turnovers and basically three turnovers because he had the interception, which was his fault.
Mm-hmm.
He had the ball strip sacked, and there was clutter in the pocket all day, but C.J.'s got to hold on to the ball down there, especially that where they were, the deep in their own territory. He handed a field goal to the Bills, but the defense came up big, keeping the Bills out of the end zone there. And then the really one of the only bad things that can happen when you're throwing the ball on third down on the fringe of Kaimi range, an intentional grounding penalty that gives you that is a minus 10-yard play and you lose a down.
Yeah.
So now you're punting instead of kicking a field goal. But that's what that you know. Look, good teams, the defense and the special teams pick up the offense, and that's what the Texans did yesterday.
Passing in that situation was frustrating. The fact that he was in that situation of passing, and
I'm absolving you, man.
Can't absolve CJ of the mistake.
Too cute,
and yet it was also with pressure in his face. He was making the right decision to throw it, either throw it away or at least maybe make it a really hard catch. He's really good at throwing the, and I afterwards. He disagreed with it. You could tell he was trying not to get fined. He disagreed with whether or not it should have been.
The referee's call.
He was being very careful in how he disagreed with it. The referee's call.
Yeah.
But I think that we've seen him before when under duress. He does a good job of throwing it, and maybe Dalton Schultz makes an incredible play on the ball or something. I think that was his intent, but it just sailed on him more than it would have. So, to come back from that, you think back to, it was the NFC Championship game when Tom Brady threw three interceptions in like 1.5 minutes.
I think it was.
In Tampa.
It was a playoff game.
And then they came back and won. Yeah, these are the signature moments that really good quarterbacks do. They're going to have times where they have stinkers of a quarter or a stretch, and then can you just come back and act like nothing ever happened at all?
Yeah, if you're asking me concerns coming out of this game, and look, it's a win, so concerns get pushed to the back of the line here. C.J. Stroud is not a concern coming out of this game to me. A bad quarter. He's still a great quarterback. My biggest concern coming out of this game and throughout the afternoon was Nico Collins' hamstring.
Mm-hmm.
You know, even with the Texans never trailed in this game, so there was never a point where I was worried about, oh, they got to come back in this game. There were certainly junctures in this game where I thought, okay, Josh Allen's going to get it going here at some point. He's an MVP candidate. He never did. He was 9 for 30 for 131 yards. Texans defense did a tremendous job on Josh Allen. The Nico Collins hamstring was my biggest worry throughout the afternoon because the offense looked so different without Nico Collins out there.
Yeah, and that's a long-term worry, too, when you start to see, okay, Nico, like all the things we're saying about the offense, about like, okay, there's reasons why they can't quite get going, and it does feel weird. Honestly, just think of the irony of it that we'll sit here, and I believe it. Teams are doing everything they can to take away the deep ball. It's limiting what the Texans can do. They should be able to run better than they have because of it. They should have developed, like, honestly, some of their quick passing game. I don't know why they can't get it going. And yet, they also do have Nico Collins leading the league in receiving.
Still,
in a game where he didn't even play the second half.
Yeah.
So, there's more to it than just that. But, yeah, I mean, he's just been such a horse.
He has. Real quick, the report on Nico Collins, courtesy of Aaron Wilson. Optimism that Nico Collins and offensive tackle Titus Howard, that their hamstring injuries are short-term and they could be back as soon as the Patriots game coming up this weekend, per league sources. What do you think about Blake Fisher yesterday? First start?
I haven't been able to watch. I don't like talking about offensive linemen until you can actually watch all their individual snaps, but I did notice him multiple times, including on one of the plays we just discussed, but it blanks on me, where he had... it was on the Nico Collins touchdown. Blake Fisher had a really good job versus Epinosa there. He did, so he had some nice snaps. I noticed more really nice snaps out of him than I noticed glaring issues. When last week when he went in, it was glaring
That was rough.
If we ever had any illusions and we got frustrated with Laramie about his injury, his false starts or anything, like that was a reminder, okay, yeah, but Laramie is still a very good football player.
But
this week it was much different.
And so was Laramie, too. We should point that out. He's not going to get acknowledged for it at 720. I'm not going to acknowledge somebody for not getting penalties.
Right.
For not being the most penalized player in the league for a week. But it does go to show you, like, it goes to show, yesterday's game was, I thought, a fantastic illustration of the correlation between the penalties with the Texans and the performance of the team. They played a completely clean first half, and they were up 17-3 at the half, and they dominated. The third quarter, they commit six penalties, And that was the quarter the Bills were able to get back. The Bills scored 14. They scored their two touchdowns in that quarter. And then the Texans are able to kind of hem down the penalties. The only penalty in the fourth quarter, I believe, was CJ's intentional grounding penalty.
Mm-hmm.
And they're able to kind of bring the ship into the shore. So, but it was the first half of this game was really fun to watch because you're like, man, this... We're really getting a taste of what the potential for this team is because that's a good team on the other side over there.
Yeah.
That's a good football
team.
Well, the defense, and you dominated especially,
them the defense makes
half.
Life difficult. They really do. Now, they've got weaknesses versus the run. That's what's frustrating when they, you know, Cam Akers did some nice things running the ball. But the Texans averaged 3.4 yards per carry. Not good at all.
Nope.
A team like the Ravens can expose that weakness to an extreme degree.
Yeah.
The Texans can't do that right now. I mean, I still do feel after that game that, yeah, if we're doing the college football committee here and looking at common opponents and everything, the Texans still have to prove to me that they're in the Ravens weight class. But they did go versus a very good defense without Nico Collins for the entire second half and did some good things.
We'll hit the NFL bullet point wise in the 7 o'clock hour with the big games yesterday. The games you need to know about. For purposes of the Texans, the big one is the Jags are now 1-4, not 0-4 anymore. They beat the Colts yesterday 37-34, and so the Texans now have a full two-game lead, not to mention the tiebreaker over the Colts head-to-head in the AFC South. Deshaun Watson was terrible again yesterday. I can only imagine what they're saying in Cleveland about the fact that Joe Flacco threw for 359 yards in a loss yesterday. I mean, Joe Flacco was tremendous. They didn't lose that game, the Colts, because of Joe Flacco. He put up 34 points and was outstanding yesterday.
Oh, Flacco. Mo Flacco, my old friend. Oh, would that I see Joe Flacco out there playing versus the Texans.
Yeah, I mean, they may see him in a few weeks.
You look around the standings, too, and you say, okay, the Texans are 3-1.
Four and one.
Yeah. The teams right now that are undefeated, the Chiefs at 4-0, the Vikings. I think the Chiefs aren't the same, but like we've seen this before.
They win.
Their defense is really good. They'll figure some things out offensively. The Commanders, I have no idea what to make of for real.
They're fun.
I know. They're fun.
They're fun
as hell right now.
Yeah.
So that's impressive. And I guess the Ravens got off to a super slow start. But you got to remember that around the league, there's very few world beaters right now.
Yeah.
And the Texans are still... very young. It's weird. They're old. They got a lot of old guys on the roster, but a lot of their key players are still very young. And I'm frustrated in some ways, but I also see the potential if they just keep making these improvements from week to week.
Last one here in headlines, baseball, just real quick. The Yankees and Guardians are both up 1-0 in their series. They resume their series today. In the National League, both series are tied at 1. I am a Padres fan now for the playoffs. I'm a Padres fan because Dodger fans, criminals that they are, were throwing things at Padre players. Fernando Tatis came out to right field the inning after they got all the chicanery calmed down and was kind of thrusting his hips at Dodger fans.
Yeah.
Manny Machado is yelling at Jack Flaherty in the Dodger dugout. I hate the Dodgers to begin with, and I think their fans are a bunch of crybabies who can't turn the page.
Probably the most
Padres.
Are the Dodgers fans the most classless fan base in all of sports?
They're up there. Yeah, they're in the conversation.
I would include any kind of like far-flung soccer leagues where officials get murdered
across the
globe. I
think
they're worse than any of them.
They're bad.
They're globally an atrocious fan
they're
base.
They're bad. So
they actively wish physical harm upon other baseball players.
And then they
teach their children to do that.
And then they inflict it on the fans of those other teams.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, no, they're horrible.
They're so stabby.
Go Padres. Go Padres. All right. D'Amico Ryans to his team in the locker room. We will hear the locker room speech, and we will relive key plays from the game through the voice of Vandy. Mark Vandermeer will take us on the journey here through what was a fantastic soap opera yesterday out at NRG Stadium. 23-20, the Texans beat the Bills yesterday on a last-second field goal from Kaimi Fairbairn.